Good morning. It is Tuesday, August 8, 2006, at approximately 9:30 a.m. My agenda says p.m. on my calling sheet. 9:30 a.m. We are here in room 412 in Pier. My name is Bob Starr. I'm chairman of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, and with me in Pier are Commissioners Gary Hansen and Dusty Johnson. I'm going to check the phone call in, so when I call your name, if you'd indicate if you're on or not, we would appreciate that. First one we have down is Aberdeen American News. Angela Nettler. Next one is Rebecca DeCook from Holland and Hart. Next one is Sioux Valley Energy.
I'm here.
Is that Corey?
Yeah, this is Corey.
Thank you. Next is FEM. Paul Erickson. Next one is Larry Nelson. Thank you very much, Larry, and your volume is low, so we power. Thanks on the line from Black Hills.
Yeah, this is Brian Iverson. I'm on a separate line.
Great. Thank you, Brian. Next is Burns and McDonald. Is anyone on the line from Burns and McDonald?
We are here, and we have Basin Electric on the line with us.
Thank you, and could you identify yourself, please?
Mary Howder and Chris Howell.
And from Basin Electric, it's Dick Schaefer, Jim Berg, and Russ Mather.
Thank you. Talbot Wysorek.
I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ryan Taylor.
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Janet Keller.
Yes, on one, thank you.
James Croft.
Here, Mr. Chairman.
And is it Paul Schudel?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm present, thank you.
Is that the right pronunciation?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And did anyone else join us since we started calling roll call? It sounded as if someone might have joined or dropped, so if anyone else is on the line that I didn't call, please identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, it's Rich Helsper on behalf of Global Polymer.
Thank you, Rich. Good morning. Apparently, we've had a number of requests for people to join us telephonically. So if the folks who are on the line for agenda items, once your items are completely done, if you'd be nice enough to drop, that would help free up some additional lines. And I'm going to look during the meeting to staff to see if we have needs to add people or drop people accordingly. So if people would be mindful of that, we'd appreciate that. First item on the agenda is consumer reports, status report on consumer utility inquiries and complaints received by the commission. Ms. Gregg, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioner Sauer. The commission has received a total of 227 contacts since the last report was prepared for the July 11, 2006 commission meeting. 40 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 52 of the contacts involved electrical services, 20 contacts involved natural gas services, 41 contacts involved cellular phone services, 51 contacts were related to the Do Not Call registry, and 23 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,283 of the 1,499 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved, and 1,674 of the 1,885 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved.
Thank you very much. Any questions from commissioners or staff? Thank you. Next, we're going to go out of order. We're going to go to the addendum. And the first item on that is under gas and electric. And although it is a gas and electric docket, it's probably more of an administrative type issue. It is GE06001 in the matter of the merger between Northwestern Corporation and BBI Glacier Corp, a subsidiary of Babcock & Brown Infrastructure Limited. And the question today is, shall the commission file a protest or additional comments in FERC docket EC06-127-000, and how shall the commission proceed? And I'm going to ask Mr. Smith if he would be nice enough to give us some background on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you aptly perceived and characterized, I think, a mistake that's on the agenda. This was supposed to be a continuation of the administrative filing, that agenda item that we had here some months ago. And we were all gone last week, and due to the confusion of attempting to do business from 2,000 miles away, I note that this was put on as our state docketed item. However, I don't think it's totally inappropriate to perhaps have that docket designation on there, even though we're not explicitly going to discuss that today. And that is the reason for having this proceeding here today, relates to the fact that we have the pending state docket. And sort of the quandary that's put the commissioners in terms of their ability and to deal with the federal proceeding while we have a state docket pending. As I'm sure most of you out there know, the South Dakota Administrative Procedures Act prohibits decision makers in South Dakota from having discussions with parties to a case about issues of fact or issues of law while a proceeding is pending. And since we have a state proceeding pending, that makes it very difficult for the commissioners either to discuss what to do in the federal proceeding among themselves or to discuss it with the other parties for purposes such as discussing possible settlement options or even discussing the filings in the case. And ordinarily, in a case where we are a party as opposed to where we are the adjudicator, the commissioners themselves make those decisions, and they and their direct advisors, Ms. Wiestenai and Mr. Rizlov, usually perform that function as opposed to staff who does that function when the commission are adjudicators. And I think the purpose here today is in order to avoid running afoul of the ex parte statute, which is 126-26, if memory serves me correctly, and also to avoid running afoul of the South Dakota open meeting statutes, the commissioners felt that it was necessary for them to have the discussions regarding the FERC proceeding in an open forum where the public and the other parties to the state docket can be present and will in fact not have had communications that are outside of their hearing. And I think the main purpose of this is initially, again, as you've seen the questions on the agenda, and there may be one other administrative item that I'm going to request the commissioners address, and that is with respect to the FERC proceeding, whether they wish to authorize our legal counsel in that case, Spiegel and McDermott, to retain a consultant expertise in terms of the financial and ring-fencing issues that we've raised in that proceeding. But before we do that, I think what I want to do now is turn the discussion over to the commissioners where they can bring up the questions I think that they have. And again, I think they relate primarily to the commitments that Northwestern has made both in the FERC application and in your answers to both ours and the bonding assurance company, and I regret to say I forgot the initials, the acronym, MPIA, okay, and also, frankly, to East River and Basin. And a lot of those issues
joining the meeting.
Overlap to some extent, particularly those I think related to agreeing not to attempt to flow through the acquisition premium into rate base. And that I think, as I read the answer filing, Northwestern committed in the FERC proceeding to do that at both the retail and wholesale level. And so that's therefore relevant both at the state jurisdictional level and at the FERC jurisdictional level. And so maybe we'll start with there, and maybe I'll turn it over to the commissioners who originally requested that we have this proceeding. And again, the reason we did this is they did not, were adamant about not having substantive discussions about this and violate the open meeting law. And so the purpose of this today is to have a completely open discussion and see if we can get this thing steered toward a positive direction, I guess, for South Dakota ratepayers and for Northwestern and for the commission.
Do we need to take appearances, or since this is a dialogue, we don't? I know that I see counsel from a number of the entities here, and we do have a court reporter.
Sure. Why don't we do that? And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, we're not in a this is not a formal adjudicatory proceeding, I don't think. But on the other hand, we might as well do that. And Mr. Gerdes, on behalf of Northwestern, would you care to introduce yourself and those persons who you're representing, who are representatives of your client today?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, my name is Dave Gerdes. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I am appearing here for Northwestern Corporation. With me are Mike Hansen, the President, Tom Knapp, the General Counsel, and Mike Seidel and Pam Bonroot. And it's our purpose here today to stand ready to respond to questions that the Commissioners might have about the filings in the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission proceeding. And with that, I'll just leave it open and feel free to pose those questions which you wish.
Mr. Gerdes, I have one question at the outset. My assumption is, and I think I know this, but Northwestern is in the FERC proceeding represented by counsel, that is FERC counsel. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And they're not. Are they on the line today or available? Okay.
No, they are
okay.
not.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to know that. Are there other parties in attendance in the Northwestern case who have any intention of appearing today or saying anything in regard to this proceeding? I noticed, like, for example, Ms. Rogers, again, this really isn't necessarily your proceeding here today, but the purpose, I think, was to have a pretty open and general discussion.
Thank you. My name is Darla Rogers, and I represent East River and Basin Electric. They are interveners in the state docket, which is GE06001. I don't believe anyone else from East River is on the line today, but I believe there may be some parties from Basin Electric as well that are on the phone today.
Would the persons from Basin Electric wish to identify themselves? I think we caught you earlier, but in the while the reporter is recording here.
Mr. Smith, this is Russ Mather. I'm one of the staff counsels from Basin Electric. Somewhat embarrassed, I'm not involved in the in this particular matter. We're here on this end primarily to deal with a study that we've submitted with respect to the project.
Thank you, and we're not expecting, we're not going to tie it to the rack or anything like that today, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Oh, we very much appreciate that.
Okay, yep. Is there anyone else who would like to identify themselves relative to this matter?
Members of the Commission, my name is Jennifer Woolman, and I'm here today on behalf of South Dakota Power and Heartland Consumer Power District. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I'm assuming you don't want to say anything, Brad. I couldn't resist that, though. With that, I think I'm going to turn it over to the commissioners, if you want, and to unless you want me to do something else, and to begin to outline maybe what you want to talk about with the Northwestern representatives that are here. And I mean, maybe you want to have either Mr. Gerdes or Mr. Knapp or someone explain their positions in the FERC proceeding and in their filings there, and so you can ask questions about it.
And I think you did a good job setting up the issues, but maybe just bullet point them again. What are the issues that you need us to decide today so that we don't get too far off track on perhaps side issues?
Well, I think the actual issues we need to decide today is, first of all, do we want to file any additional pleadings in the case? the how shall the commission proceed is much more general because, again, I don't precisely know what direction this might go today. And I just wanted to make sure we had a question that's broad enough to allow you to fairly take action that might be stimulated by the discussion that takes place today. And then lastly, our legal counsel in the case has suggested that we retain a economic consultant, if you will, a financial consultant, to help them develop, if we're going to file any additional papers in the case, to help them develop the our filing with respect to the financial issues and, in particular, ring-fencing issues. So that's the last specific questions. Now, if you want me to begin to address, do you want me to address more specifically the
phrases file a protest or additional comments, maybe just review what has been filed by the commission in the FERC docket to date and where we're at on that?
We filed a petition, a notice of intervention, not a petition to intervene under the FERC regulations. We have intervention as a matter of right as a state commission. But we also requested in that proceeding an extension of time for the filing of additional comments along with the Montana Consumer Council. The FERC did, in fact, grant our collective petitions in that regard. The filing date for under the extension is August 14th, which is still a very tight time frame. In the original petition filed by Northwestern, its application for approval by FERC, and in its answer, Northwestern, for example, made various commitments in response to the issues that we had raised. And I think one of the purposes of the discussion here today is to just discuss mainly how Northwestern sees those commitments working out, whether this might be in regard to, I'll just put it on the table, I guess, in regard to those issues where Northwestern has made explicit commitments in the FERC proceeding. I guess the way Northwestern sees those as becoming executable by us, if you will, in the future, or enforceable by us, and whether maybe the company would be amenable, since you've already agreed to those things, into reducing those to some kind of stipulation or settlement agreement with the South Dakota Commission to resolve our involvement in the FERC proceeding. And if you want to, I mean, we can start going down the litany of issues in there. But maybe we might want to hear, at least generally, from either Mike Hansen or Tom Knapp about the proceeding in general and just how you guys perceive this and take it from there.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, Tom Knapp, General Counsel for Northwestern Corporation. I guess maybe it's best to just start out and describe the overall transaction for you and others in the audience and that are listening by phone. As you're probably aware, BBI, Babcock & Brown Infrastructure Limited, has signed an agreement, a merger agreement, to purchase the company for $37 per share. Under the structure of the transaction, BBI, as we'll refer to them throughout this this session that we're having today, set up a separate company that will merge into Northwestern, but Northwestern will remain the operating company going forward. So as a result of that, and because Northwestern is a public utility regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, we needed to file an application with FERC for approval of the merger, because there's, as I described, there will be a merger of an entity into Northwestern, and because FERC has jurisdiction over Northwestern as a public utility, and there will be a change of ownership. So generally, we filed an application with FERC seeking that merger approval by the agency. Under its merger approval policy, it'll have 180 days in which to review the transaction and provide a decision Mr. Smith indicated, when we filed our application, there was a period of time for interested parties to file a notice or petition to intervene. That took place. We had asked the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to provide a certain period of time for that to happen. As Mr. Smith indicated, the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, as well as the Montana Public Service Commission and Consumer Council, asked for an additional time. FERC granted that up until August 14th for not only the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission and Montana, but all other interested persons to provide any additional comments, protests, or interventions. And then Northwestern has a 14-day period after that to respond. That's where we're currently at in terms of that docket. We're still waiting for any additional interventions, protests, or comments to come in by the August 14th deadline. And then based on those comments or interventions or protests, whatever they may be, we'll respond to those, and then the commission will take that up. If there's a contested case, if there's a contested series of facts, the commission will take it up as a contested case. If there's not, the commission will then deal with it under their delegation rules. But under both circumstances, we anticipate a decision within 180 days from the date we filed. Does the chairman, commissioners, or others have questions?
Commissioners, do you have questions, comments?
Well, sure. I won't hog the mic. You know, I'll take raise one issue, and then if other commissioners want to share one, we'll sort of do a round robin maybe. But I was hoping that I thought in your answer and in your initial application, you did a pretty good job of talking about how decisions will be developed. Northwestern decisions will be developed by on-site local Northwestern management, and then assessed and approved by the Board of Northwestern. And then later on talking about local management. I was just hoping you could give, I don't know, but I suspect that a lot of South Dakotans who are currently Northwestern customers are going to be concerned that the decision makers and people that are going to be people that don't know them, that don't know their communities, that don't understand, how important a player Northwestern is in South Dakota today and has been for, generations. Could you talk a little bit about what is that local decision making? What does that local operating decision look like? How is that going to feel to South Dakotans?
Good, Mr. Chairman, commissioners, guests. I'm Mike Hansen from Northwestern. I'll address that question, Mr. Commissioner. I think for people to understand it, the first concept to have in mind is simply that Northwestern, as a separately incorporated legal entity, will continue to exist. And so questions that are raised about our legal liabilities under various agreements and the like are simply continue in a force. And in effect, our responsibilities as a utility provider in South Dakota continue as they are. BBI's approach is to acquire companies and continue to have the management and supervisory, and for that matter, the field personnel, they have continue. Our agreement has a commitment to maintain staffing levels for 2 years following the closing. And so in a nutshell, you have the same people in each of our communities providing the same service. Mr. Saito, who's with us today, is the general manager of our South Dakota and Nebraska operations. He is the operating manager of those. He will continue in that role. The management of Northwestern will remain the same. We will have a new owner, and as such, there will be a new board of directors. But just as we interact with our board today, all of our operating plans, budgets, resource needs, other issues will be dealt with by the management, presented to the board for appropriate review, oversight, and approval, and continue much as we do today.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about anything that we might know today about what a new Northwestern Board of Directors might look like Has BVI given any indication of that?
Commissioner, Mr. Chairman, there's been discussion about they have not finalized that, so I just share with you my understanding of the approach that they use to the makeup of the board and what their intent is. So the final board members yet to be fully identified. But the chairman of the board is expected to be Stephen Bolton, who's the CEO of BVI Limited from Sydney. Steve has a utility background. He's been in the industry for, if I recall, 20-some years. They also have two operating management personnel, one that deals with their transport sector, the other with energy. Jeff Kendrew is their chief operating officer for energy, and he would be a member of the board. It's expected that the chief financial officer of BVI, who's Jonathan Seller, would be a member of the board. Myself and perhaps one or more other executives of Northwestern, and then some number of independent directors that have yet to be named. And BBI's approach is to have a majority of the directors would be U.S. Citizens and domiciled here, and they like to have some number of independent directors for various issues to just give advice from people that are not directly connected to the company. And so that's the general makeup with the final board slate yet to be named.
I'll just ask a follow-up question and then, you know, turn it over to either of the other commissioners. And obviously, I think it's important to have, you know, qualified people with expertise on the board as independent directors as opposed to any sort of, you know, parochial interests. But in other boards that it set up, has BBI ever taken a real interest in making sure that the independent directors are, you know, from the geography that's being served by the utility company? Or is that their intention in this case? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, to the best of my knowledge, I think the answer is yes to both of those. I could not recite off the top of my head who the independent directors are for the various entities that they have, but in general conversation, they like to have people that are not only knowledgeable of the industry, they're knowledgeable of the needs of the geographic locales that we serve.
And I would just, you know, note as a comment to close my interest in that particular matter for today. I mean, I do think there is some concern about South Dakotans. They just don't know what a new owner looks like yet. They don't quite know. I don't think they yet have confidence that BBI understands South Dakota or South Dakotans. And I don't know that that's a fair assumption on people's parts yet. But I would just ask that you and BBI, if this merger receives all the necessary regulatory approvals, that you keep that in mind and do everything you can to keep a strong South Dakota, Nebraska, Montana voice throughout the operations and decision-making bodies of Northwestern.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, just to respond briefly, in a nutshell, they're relying on us to know the customers, the communities, the needs of the areas, us being the employees of Northwestern. We're the ones who are responsible for meeting those needs today, and that's the intent later. BBI, frankly, would be a new owner and function at the board level, but they rely on all of our employees to meet the needs of our customers in each of the communities we serve, and that will continue.
Good morning. Obviously, of paramount interest to the consumers and ratepayers across the state are things like rates, reliability, systems upgrades, making sure that we're out there and that you're out there running a first-class utility. Maybe you can talk a little bit about your plans of how you see this merger perhaps assisting in that or some of the challenges that may be faced, making sure that you're delivering affordable, reliable electricity and natural gas to consumers in the state and region. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, as the Commission knows, others may not be aware, but the rates in South Dakota are based on the cost of providing service within the state of South Dakota, and that doesn't change with a change in equity ownership. A question has been asked about the acquisition premium, or in other words, the premium above book value. It's our understanding that rates are based on the original cost less depreciation of the property, plant, and equipment that are used and our operating expenses, those do not change with a change in equity ownership, and therefore any premium paid by BBI would not be reflected in rates as well. In terms of our operating plans, it's been our goal for many years to maintain high reliability, good customer satisfaction, good public and employee safety and the like, the kinds of, and be an active supporter in the communities that we serve. Obviously, as a distribution utility, we do well if our communities do well, and if they suffer, we suffer with them. So it's important to us that the communities are vital and a viable place to live and to work and raise a family. With that in mind, we're actually very pleased with the results we've had here in South Dakota. We're in the first quartile in the industry as far as electric reliability is concerned. We, as the commission may be aware, had a major impact on our system last November. We've nearly completed the reconstruction efforts. The result of that is we have a lot of the system has been upgraded and replaced. We expect it to perform well. In the recent heat, as an example, we performed very well. Mike is here, could give more details, but I was only made aware of a couple of small transformers that overloaded, and then one that's not even ours, Northern States University, had their own transformer overload. So that's just an indicator I look at to see how we're doing. We expect to continue that type of reliability. We'll make the financial commitments necessary to upgrade, replace, and maintain those systems as need be. As far as impacts from BBI transaction, it really boils down to having owners of the company that take a long-term view. They're a patient utility investor, expect to earn a modest return for modest risk over a long time. That's not the makeup of our shareholders today. That will be beneficial in allowing the company to focus its attention on customer needs and not spend so much time considering shareholder desires, if you will. Along with that, we would expect, again, not an immediate impact, but BBI is a larger organization that accesses capital markets around the world. They're in those capital markets much more often than we Northwestern are, and as a result, arguably would have better access to capital or access to capital on better terms, again, over the long run, not necessarily in any given moment in time. Like right now, if you wanted to compare our debt rates with theirs, I suspect they're not substantially different. But as time goes on, we will need to raise capital either through equity or debt markets to fund capital investments, and we expect to be able to do that, and that would be beneficial to consumers and helping to provide the service. And the last thing would be access to expertise of people that are involved not only with BBI but other firms that Babcock and Brown is involved in. Should we decide to expand investments, as an example, in renewable resources here in South Dakota, there are branches of the Babcock and Brown family of companies that that's what they do. They're experts in the field. We could tap that expertise to advise us on what makes the most sense for South Dakota. So I would, if I had to summarize the benefits, it's to bring stability, better access to capital, and access to expertise over the long run.
You talked a little bit about the current premium, and perhaps along those same lines, but I just want to make sure that we are correctly interpreting this. We also have bankruptcy costs, administrative costs with this particular transaction, which, and this is a really rough estimate, but you know, I've been told could be approaching or going in advance of $100 million, and maybe that's much higher than you would expect. I don't know. And then also the previous premiums paid for the Montana properties. Do we have any concern about sort of this stacking, or is there stacking of these premiums and these costs? And you know, what should we have concern about that as far as the health of the company going forward, and is there any potential effect on rates? And maybe the same answer you gave earlier, Mike, when you talked about the rates and the premium that's in effect now. But, you know, just to make sure we explore that, because we probably are talking, you know, when you add all that up, something in the hundreds of millions and certainly over $100 million. So maybe you can just discuss that briefly as well.
Mr. Chairman, the various costs associated with our review of strategic alternatives, the ultimate transaction, are substantial. They certainly are not in the range of $100 million. They would be millions, but not that high. Bankruptcy costs are behind us. Those costs have been expensed by the company during the time that we went through the bankruptcy and are reported on our historic results. But in terms of impact on rates, it's the same. We did not borrow money to finance those. We're not carrying debt on our balance sheet for any of those. And as a result, we're simply expense those as we go. There would be no impact. Again, when we're looking at the cost of providing service to South Dakota customers, whether it's gas or electric, those costs would not be included. And so we would not be seeking any recovery in rates of either bankruptcy or transaction-related costs.
And then one last question along the lines of rates, and I'll see if my counterparts here have other questions. But the issue of whether or not you're going to be seeking any types of rate increases or rate reviews in South Dakota, any anticipation or expectations with that regard?
I would just share, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners and the other guests here, our view at this point is that on the natural gas side of the business, the growth in revenues has not kept pace with the growth in expenses, and we are seeing pressure on rates of natural gas. We don't see the same immediate pressures on electric. That said, we have no plans to file during 2006 for a rate case in either case, but we will have to monitor the natural gas side of the business as we go into 07 just to make sure that our rates are reflective of the cost of providing service for that commodity.
Thank you. I'll see if my fellow commissioners have additional questions.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I appreciate very much your coming here this today and giving us an opportunity to chat a little bit with you. I'm not accustomed, when I was first elected to this position, to having to have to go through a process, a formal process, in order to talk to people about certain situations. Could just pick up the phone, talk to them, get it taken care of, and go from there. And it seemed to make things a lot easier, although occasionally people are accused of not letting other people know what's taking place. So there's a very good reason for us to meet here today under these type of formal circumstances. Although it doesn't necessarily make our jobs easier, it does let the citizens know what's taking place. I have, during the process, made a couple of lists, and I should probably do more typing, but I have a tendency to change my lists a lot, and I like to carry them around with me. I don't want to carry a laptop. So if you bear with me a little bit, I'm going to jump around just a little bit. I've made one list of reasons why I think this is a good deal and another list of concerns that might need to be covered. On one side is the long-term potential stability that BBI apparently is bringing, as opposed to short-term investors. Reasonable utility rates with moderate return to owners is something that we've been told is going to take place and continue. You have vast transmission experience, I understand. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, within the Babcock and Brown family of companies, one of the things that they are expert on is transmission development and financing. And so as we look ahead, we at Northwestern have the obligation to identify whatever needs. We do see both need and opportunity for some transmission development in South Dakota. If we need the expertise, it's available to us to advise and assist on finalizing those plans.
Certainly we recognize that there are challenges in South Dakota for transmission and opportunities. Excuse me a little bit if I stretch the envelope of where we are supposed to tread during this particular meeting, but because we really don't have the opportunity to pick up the phone and chat, I'm going to take a little bit of opportunity to stretch the envelope. BBI has significant expertise in wind energy. As I understand, are you the third largest owner of wind in the United States?
Chairman, Commissioner, Babcock and Brown Wind Partners is a affiliated company. BBI has a percentage equity ownership in BBW.
Correct.
But as they've progressed, they tend to have those assets in a different infrastructure fund. That said, I've heard a number of times the Babcock and Brown folks say that they are, BBW is the third largest owner of wind resources in the country, and I believe fourth largest in the world.
Thank you. And I understood what you were, and I was aware that BBI and BBW are separate entities and that they're under BB and they pay the management fees, et cetera. But I appreciate your pointing that out for the record. You said fourth largest owner of wind in the world, do you believe?
That's my understanding.
BBW?
Commissioner, that's my understanding.
Okay. And I also understand that there's potential for access to financing from BBI to working with BB.
Yes.
You always say Babcock and Brown, and I understand why. But.
Well, they commonly refer to it as B&B.
B&B?
Babcock and Brown, and then BBI for Babcock and Brown Infrastructures.
All right.
Short answer to your questions, yes.
At the same time, on my concerns list, which is perhaps a little bit longer, is that the new structure needs to be relatively easy for regulators to monitor.
Is joining the meeting.
Welcome. The new structure needs to be relatively easy for regulators to monitor. We need to have transparency. And as I understand from your previous comments, that's not going to change.
That's right, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. We, Northwestern, will continue to file all the regulatory reports we do in each of our jurisdictions, our FERC Form 1s, the state filings. We will have publicly traded debt, so we'll continue to file our SEC reports, the annual 10-K, 10-Q. The only change is we would not be submitting an annual proxy for solicitation of votes of shareholders because we would not have public shareholders. But all the other reports and information would be available. Likewise, the commission's access to information under your own jurisdiction remains the same. So the transparency should be as good or better afterwards as it is today.
Certainly. And I appreciate your elaboration, fleshing out some of these a little bit more than what you did previously, because I know that as I'm going through these, and I don't expect you to comment on all of them, that you've already commented on some of them. One of my concerns has been what we call ring fencing, the need for entities to be separate. I'd asked that question when we first met, whether or not it's true ring fencing or whether it's, you know, ring fencing to some people is a relative term. To me, it's pretty definite. You either have ring fencing or you don't. And I know that with some folks, they have partial ring fencing. Just how much of a separation will there be between the entities, between BBI and Northwestern? Excuse me, B&B.
B&B. Well, BBI, in this case, the ring fencing provisions that Northwestern put in place in our bankruptcy will remain the same. You might recall that we are under a investment limitation for non-regulated assets. The only non-regulated assets that we have today are some gas supply services here in South Dakota to large volume users like ethanol plants and a share of a power plant in Montana. We have no intention of venturing into non-energy businesses. The structural ring fencing provisions remain in effect in perpetuity. Those investment limitations are subject to certain rating agencies. So the ring fencing is complete in that the only debt that we take at Northwestern is to be used for our utility purposes. We will not borrow money to be used for any other purpose or to fund or upstream payments to BBI. Any other financings that they have relative to other assets are non-recourse to Northwestern. Our assets are secured solely by our own debt. We have an unsecured revolving line of credit for working capital, and we receive from them effectively equity infusions. And so all of the debt that we have is non-recourse to other BBI investments. Any debt that they have at BBI or other entities is non-recourse to Northwestern.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We also need to be assured that there's financial vitality, and you've certainly covered that to an extent. There was a statement in the press that I'm somewhat concerned about, and you might like to cover that. It was pertaining to the very rapid growth in the industry and potential rapid growth, I'm not sure exactly what I was referring to, of BBI, and stated that Northwestern and several other companies expanded too fast and wound up in bankruptcy, and that this company has experienced a lot of very rapid growth, and I think the inference was that there was potential challenges there. Would you like to address that?
Yes, and I'll try to do it as briefly as I can, Mr. Commissioner. If I had to contrast in Northwestern's growth, there was, as became apparent, financing done at the parent level based on the net worth of the utility to finance its investments in these other assets. That is not the approach that BBI uses. The ring fencing provisions prevent that. So while they certainly have grown rapidly, each of the entities is a financially standalone. And so in terms of financial viability, Northwestern today is generating positive cash flow after paying all of our operating expenses, paying our people, financing our necessary capital investments and the like. And so with positive cash flow, we don't have the same concern. But the ring fencing provisions we're talking about would prevent that leveraging that resulted in the bankruptcy of Northwestern from recurring.
Thank you. To an extent, you answered. There's also another statement in that article about Australia's disclosure process to ensure officials can get the necessary information to properly regulate Northwestern if the company is sold. I think you've addressed that to an extent with the with your statement pertaining to ring fencing. Asset shielding is a concern of mine, and rate stability. You've addressed those to an extent. With that statement that regardless, as I understand, and I'm understanding that regardless of what Australia's laws are, you're still a South Dakota company, emphasize South Dakota. Regardless of that, am I understanding correctly that nothing changes?
That's right, Commissioner. Our financial information obviously will flow up and would be subject at BBI to their reporting requirements. We will continue to meet the SEC reporting requirements here in the U.S. With the filing of our annual 10-K and 10-Q.
The reason I stated South Dakota company twice was that's something that we've talked about a number of times, and I don't know how well we can nail your shoes to an office building in Sioux Falls, but that's something that we have a very strong interest in. We understand that you've assured us to an extent back and forth that you're going to remain in South Dakota. We understand that there are other states that would like Northwestern to plant their flag, I don't expect you to comment on it, although if you did, that would be fine. I have a very strong interest in seeing Northwestern remain a South Dakota company.
Well, we certainly appreciate that, Mr. Commissioner. South Dakota has been very good to this company, and we hope to be very good to the state and the communities as well. It's no secret that we're under pressure from Montana. There's interveners that have argued that the headquarters ought to be moved to Montana because we have a larger operation in Montana. We intend to maintain adequate staffing, supervision, management in all of our jurisdictions. I can't say that nothing would ever change there in the future, depending on circumstances. We'll do that, which is in the best interest of the company. I can say very clearly, though, we have no plans at this point in time to move the headquarters of Northwestern outside of South Dakota.
Thank you. I have just two last questions and turn it back. Going third usually affords me no questions, but I take a little bit of an opportunity here to make a comment, too, and that is on your reliability. I know that you went through along with a lot of other electric companies in South Dakota went through some serious challenges this last winter. Could you tell us a little bit about number of poles and what happened during that process? I understand you just during this peak period you reached a...
Mr. Commissioner, Chairman, if it's all right, I could give you my recollection and summary, but rather than do that, I'd like to turn it to Mike, who not only manages our South Dakota operations. He was the guy who led that entire effort. So.
Okay. I understand you set a new record on the number of megawatts that were you provided of electricity just a few weeks ago.
And a week ago yesterday.
And that must have been somewhat of a challenge considering the amount of damage that was done. Curious if you could tell us a little bit about that.
I sure can.
In Mike, and I apologize, if you we do have a court reporter, so if you'd identify yourself and spell your name for her, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Mike Sydow, last name spelled S-Y-D-O-W. I'm the General Manager of Operations for South Dakota, Nebraska. And, yes, we did sustain some heavy damage in the ice storm at the tail end of November. We did sustain nearly 700 poles collectively, both transmission and distribution. Many, many miles of cross arms, insulators, and in excess of probably 60 miles of conductor have been replaced. So, yes, regaining the reliability performance that we had prior to the storm has been a challenge. We found ourselves in many, many cases literally going pole to pole, having to check insulators for cracks and for broken ties and the likes of those type of things. Collectively, we worked on storm damage right up till about June 1st. We've addressed all of the issues that we've been able to identify and locate. And as Mike had stated earlier, a testimony to the rebuilding process was realized about a week ago Monday when we jumped from a total system load from July of 05, which was the previous peak of about 304 to 327. So a significant load increase actually incurred very few instances. We had, as Mike stated, we had one grocery store and one distribution transformer, and then essentially we ended up changing NSU's transformer when it faulted internally for them as well. So.
You can certainly empathize then with the South Dakota Rural Electric Association that lost about 14 times as many poles as you did and the challenges that they were confronted with. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your giving us that information. I have one last question, at least at this juncture, and that is that on April 26th, we received a letter from Pam Bonrud, Director of Regulatory Affairs, and in that she states that BBI is a long-term conservative utility owner with a proven track record. Additionally, there will be no reduction in employment in the communities we serve and no reductions in customer service. The transaction will have no adverse impact on the cost, reliability, or quality of our customer service. BBI intends to ensure local management accountability with a focus on excellent customer service. And BBI is also intending to make additional capital available for Northwestern to pursue economic transmission and generation investment opportunities to ensure Northwestern remains a stable provider of energy in Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska. At the end of that letter, it states that this letter contains forward-looking statements, and these statements are based upon our current expectations and speak only as of the date hereof. I would have loved to have seen it without that last statement, and it means that I'm going to have to somehow contact you on a weekly basis and see whether or not that's changed. Can you tell me, has any of that changed at this juncture?
Not at all, Commissioner, and all of those statements are correct, and we expect them to stay there. The disclaimer for forward-looking statements is a legal term we have to add whenever we're predicting the future. Having been through a number of shareholder and derivative lawsuits, now we perhaps are a little overly sensitive, but that's the reason for the legal disclaimer about forward-looking statements that us and other publicly traded companies use. But everything she said in there is absolutely correct.
And you expect that to be the case 1 year, 2 year, 3 years from
yes,
now?
Yes, I do.
All right. Thank you. I think that's all the questions I have.
I have a couple of follow-ups, if it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. In the FERC filing Michael Garland, president of BBI U.S. Holdings, gives a brief overview of investments and BBI's, historical investments and some of its other assets. And we've talked a little bit about reliability today, and I think you all have done a good job of, raising some of our concerns. But something that neither the application nor the answer addresses is whether or not BBI or Northwestern is planning to conduct any kind of a reliability study that would sort of give everybody, consumers, the acquiring company, the existing company, an idea of exactly what's the status of the infrastructure of Northwestern.
Commissioner, we don't have a plan to undertake a formal study here in South Dakota. We did that, as you're probably aware, in Montana. We learned a lot from it. We are applying the learnings that we have received there to our South Dakota operations. Mike, for example, is looking at some of the line clearance practices that came out of it and the like. We're not opposed to it, but I would tell you it was quite expensive. It cost us, if I recall, roughly $250,000 for that study. If we can apply the learnings without incurring that cost, we would prefer to do that.
And I think that is a good comment, and it's not the kind of thing, obviously, I've had an opportunity to chat with my fellow commissioners about. But with regard to the FERC proceeding, that may be something that I asked that the commission, mention in its filings and its pleadings that, as we, focus on reliability. And I will reiterate what you've said, which is the reliability statistics for Northwestern have been very good. You've handled a great deal of usage recently very well, and I'm certainly not criticizing anything you've done in the recent past with regard to reliability. So the only other follow-up I have, we've talked a little bit about political pressure being applied by another state, Montana, with regard to moving the operations. And I understand you're not in a position where you can make long-term promises. And I'm certainly not asking for one. But as Northwestern deals with the Montana Commission and the Montana Consumer Council, is that an area where if a settlement were to be reached with Montana, that Northwestern or BBI would be willing to have that be part of a concession by Northwestern, that as a result of approval by the Montana Commission, the headquarters would be moved?
I can't speculate on possible settlement discussions, Commissioner, but I would tell you that we understand the concern voiced about having the right management supervision, familiar with and focused on issues in that state, just as we should have here in South Dakota and in Nebraska. We intend to make sure that our regulators in that state are satisfied that we have the right people with the right skill sets focused on that. We do not intend to move the headquarters from South Dakota.
And I understand that. I know Northwestern is going to be a well-run company regardless of whether BBI is the ultimate owner or not. I would just want to make sure that the location of key management personnel is an issue that is decided by Northwestern based on what's right for the consumers and for the company as opposed to political pressure. And that is my only concern, that as we, as you all move through the Montana process, that I would have serious concerns about that being a concession that Northwestern would make in order to secure Montana approval.
Fully understand, Commissioner, and agree with your comment, by the way.
Thanks very much. That's all I have right now, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And I would just like to state, as long as the political pressure keeps the headquarters in South Dakota, I'm fine with political pressure. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The one of the issues.
Same answer.
One of the issues raised by Commissioner Johnson was the question of reliability study, and maybe I'll get us in trouble for talking behind closed doors, but we did that a long time ago. The commissioner and I had discussed that, and I do think with Excel, the commission predating the three of us, but I worked on parts of it. The commission did some sort of a well, not some sort of the commission did a reliability study with Excel, and I think a lot of very positive things came out of it. And I appreciate your interest in looking at, what you've learned in Montana, and certainly I believe you could come up with some type of system that would work well and have a certain degree of flexibility and make sense for South Dakota without having to reinvent the wheel. But I think that would give the public a certain level of comfort and some sort of assurances. So, I would be interested in seeing if staff might be able to come up with something along those lines. And again, it hopefully wouldn't be something where you're doing the exact same things. Hopefully you'd be able to apply what you've learned in Montana, South Dakota, and come up with something that would work well for our state, and to a certain extent that it can be, you know, rely on some of the information that you learned up in Montana. That'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just offer a comment. I, in light of where we are relative to our industry peers for reliability and the like, I think we need to think carefully about the value and necessity of such a thing. But, you know, to cut to the chase, if the commission believes there is value, it would like to see something, we would be happy to go back and propose a study of some sort. We would likely try to have it more targeted to specific issues or concerns that might be raised, just to limit the scope and expense and make the maximum use and value out of information we've already received. But if that's the desire of the commission, we can work on that. And I would just comment, we need not do it through this docket or other formal docket. We can simply work with the commission to satisfy you that our approach to maintaining reliability is sound and reflective of solid, you know, industry practice.
Well, and whether right or wrong, those are some of the concerns we do hear from the, you know, general members of the public. So I think looking at what you have learned in Montana, looking at maybe some of the indicators that you have, perhaps you and staff could come up with something that would be sensible and, again, be something that would you know, be able to be done at a fair cost without unduly burdening the company, but at the same time being able to look at kind of some South Dakota-specific issues and just kind of be, I guess I would say, a checkup, so to speak, to make sure the system is in good shape going forward. The it has been mentioned a couple times about Babcock's interest in wind and transmission, and I've also read about ethanol plants and so on and so forth. Do we have any concern from the commission standpoint? And, you know, a lot of those are, I think, are positive things for the state. You know, most people are supportive of wind power. New transmission ventures could help make us more of an energy exporter than we already are. So I think there are some advantages with the expertise within the, you know, overall organization. Should we have any concerns about making sure that these type of if these were to go forward, these type of ventures were treated, you know, at an arm's length transaction from a consumer standpoint to make sure that, you know, because you're dealing with another Babcock and Brown or BBI entity, that we're not a situation where we have to be concerned of, and I will incorrectly use a term, but just to kind of put it out there, of some type of cross-subsidization or some situation where, you know, the Babcock entity gets better treatment than maybe the Brewing and Company entity would receive, or vice versa with you know, a contract for maybe wind energy. We want to make sure that the consumers are being adequately represented and not you know, paying any sort of additional costs that they shouldn't be from that entity. And you know, again, there are a lot of positives from the expertise in these other areas, but it does give us, you know, a little bit of concern just to make sure that it's being done fairly and that the ratepayers' interest is being respected.
Mr. Chairman, I think the financial structure and ring fencing that we talk about prevent any kind of cross-subsidization. I do think as we approach that, Northwestern will look at what are the needs of our utility consumers in the state when we look at things like renewable resource generation, transmission needs. I would just say I think it is a fair line of inquiry on the part of the commission to make sure the process we use to identify contractors or bidders or project developers was fair, transparent, and competitive, and decisions made in arm's length. We would anticipate that kind of a review.
And then just to make sure I have it clarified, and Commissioner Hansen, I think, did a good job talking about the disclosure and transparency issues. You talked about Northwestern's filings, the 10-K, the 10-Q, and so on and so forth. The transparency issues, do they, the ability for this commission to, you know, look into any of the investment concerns or any of those type of issues, financial records, so on and so forth, is it of your opinion, do we just have the ability to look at Northwestern's, or do we have also the ability to review BBIs, B&Bs, whoever might, you know, be up the line from Northwestern? Because I just want to make sure that I understood that if you're just speaking of it strictly in terms of we can look at Northwestern's books, do we and look at their filings, but do we have the ability to also look at the parents' information?
Mr. Chairman, I'll start by just telling you I haven't given a great deal of thought. Obviously, as a publicly traded company, BBI has substantial information available in the public domain on its activities, its finances, and the like. I think in terms of specific review, the commission can look at Northwestern and anything else that would impact the rates to South Dakota customers. So to the extent there are any costs associated with upstream thing, I don't expect that to occur, frankly, but I think the commission would be able to satisfy itself on the reasonableness of such costs and the like.
And I'm not trying to say whether it's a good or a bad thing, so to speak. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what concerns we might have to make sure that we adequately understand how the overall company is being run and the sort of financial backing involved with the deal. Now, the parent company, is that incorporated under Australia laws? Is that correct?
The parents for Northwestern would be a U.S. Corporation. And, Tom, you correct me. I believe it's called BBI U.S. Holdings 2 Corporation.
Going all the way up who's at the top of the food chain?
Babcock & Brown Infrastructure Limited.
Okay. And where are they incorporated?
They're in Australia.
Okay. So do they – I assume obviously they follow Australian disclosure laws and
yes.
filings and so on and so forth. Are there – in your mind, are there any substantial differences between Australian laws and United States laws when it comes to disclosures and transparency and those type of issues?
I'll let Tom comment if he has one. I'm obviously not an expert on Australian law, but our review of that, they are very similar, not identical, but certainly no – significant differences that I'm aware of.
So you don't know if there's any, and I don't want to misstate you. And I'm not, believe me, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot as an expert on Australian securities exchange law, because that would be a difficult spot. I'm just curious, and if you don't know the answer for sure, maybe you can do a little bit of research and just kind of get back to the commission on that.
We'll be happy to follow up, Mr. Chairman. I'm just saying our understanding of it is the differences are not significant.
And, one of the challenges that we face is we're having a proceeding like this where, we're asking questions, and, typically our commission proceedings, as you know, involve a significant amount of staff preparation input. We have the ability to have our staff or is charged with taking an independent review. We have the commission and advisors who assist the commission. And one of the challenges that I see facing the commission is that state procedure gives us a lot of, I guess, the ability to continue to look at ask the follow-up questions and go down the roads that we think are appropriate, because a lot of times, like we're doing here today, I mean, sometimes you can just on the spot adequately answer questions, and sometimes we need follow-up. And I think certainly our staff has done a good job historically working with Northwestern and other utilities on these sort of issues, whether it's reliability, rates, transparency, on kind of an ongoing basis. And I don't want to – and your attorney is here, and I don't want to put you in a difficult spot – but I hope you can appreciate. I mean, one of the challenges that we face is, first of all, it becomes kind of cumbersome because we're dealing with a situation like this as opposed to an open PUC docket. Second thing is as we go to the federal level, we have the ability to intervene in the case, but we really don't necessarily have the ability to ask the sort of questions and have the sort of follow-up that we do at the state level. And again, I know you have a pending motion, and I understand your position on that, and certainly you've got a good faith position, and this commission will end up ruling on that. But just out of curiosity, Mike, going forward, with the possibility we may not have a state review, I mean, what sort of commitment can we get from Northwestern, or what sort of what sort of ability do you see us on the federal level? We can raise interest, but we're not running the show at the federal level. I mean, how do we keep this sort of dialogue open and they keep going through these sort of follow-up questions that we need? And maybe I can look at my attorney as well on that, but it is kind of how these things are. It's an evolving target. It's a learning process. And how do we move forward if we don't have a state review?
Mr. Chairman, the commissioners, I'm glad you asked the question. And without commenting on the jurisdictional question has been discussed at some length, and that will be decided by this committee. We didn't presume to tell the commission what its jurisdiction is, simply ask that you decide what it is, and then if you determine that you have such jurisdiction, we're asking for approval. Likewise, the participation in FERC, the reality of it is that we're regulated by this commission and this state, and we are interested in making sure that you have whatever ever information you need to make sure that you're comfortable with our company, our service, and our prospects going forward. So if it turns out that the formal dockets are resolved in one fashion or another, it doesn't prohibit the commission from calling us in on an informal basis, but open to the public, open meeting, and ask questions, and we'll be pleased to provide the information you ask for.
And the other challenge in that, if we do not have a state proceeding, is, of course, is the inability of the interveners, members of the, and I know generally members of the public don't have standing before the commission, but the inability for the people on the streets and in the communities of South Dakota to have an opportunity to ask questions, and as smart as we all sometimes think we are in this meeting room, a lot of times you get some good information. Are you willing to commit to some type of process or some type of ability for the public to have an opportunity, short of hiring an attorney in Washington, D.C., to go out there and be able to maybe raise some issues? And frankly, I think from a public relations standpoint, it may give you the opportunity to raise comfort level. And sometimes the unanswered questions are more dangerous than the reality is going forward. And I'm just curious to see if you'd be willing to talk about some type of process along those lines. And I know you've done some public meetings, but maybe something a little more in depth.
We are, Mr. Chairman. I get calls, emails, letters every day. We respond to the best of our ability. If the commission would open it up to public question or comment, that's more than fine with us, except to the extent they're asking for proprietary business information that we couldn't provide absent a protective order of sorts. But those are very limited, as you know. So the general types of questions that may come up, we'd be pleased to answer those as well.
And we may have some additional comments or questions from commissioners, but those are what I had. And I would just pose it to Mr. Smith. One of the things that we did see from Montana was some type of agreement, I believe, between Northwestern and I don't know, should I call it an agreement? What should I call it? But basically they reduced some of these similar type issues to writing. And I'm just curious if you have – is that something we should be looking at doing here, is having staff I don't know if I want to say negotiate, but work with Northwestern on those type of things.
In the bankruptcy case, and again, I'm not sure whether you were there or not. I know you were, Mike. In the end, the Montana participation in the bankruptcy case was resolved with a stipulation, an agreement, which I regrettably gave away my copy of today. But I can't remember exactly what it was called. But one of the thoughts we had, and I'm not trying to muscle you here, I'm really not, but just to throw out as something maybe for the commissioners to decide whether that's a path they might want to go down via the staff, is whether Northwestern, you've made various commitments, and I'm assuming you believe by making those in a FERC proceeding that those are binding on the company.
Yes.
And whether you would be willing to take those and a few of the other things that I don't think I've heard anything here that sounds too unreasonable, and of course you may have a different view, but of maybe entertaining discussions with the staff on a fairly expedited basis in terms of maybe at least trying to put together maybe such a settlement document or stipulation or whatever we want to call it between this commission and the company for purposes of at least maybe reaching an acceptable resolution of our concerns at the federal proceeding. And again, I don't want to presume any outcomes, but at least whether the company believes it would be worth going down that road of discussions to see whether we could find a mutually agreeable basis. And again, you've heard discussions here today. We have a transcript, so we'll all know what the concerns of the commissioners are. And I just appreciate your views on that, and also if the members of the commission have any thoughts on that.
John, I just make a quick comment, and Tom can jump in. In the bankruptcy setting, the commission and consumer council were parties in interest, and so there was a settlement agreement between the parties in interest, and it was submitted to the court so that it would approve by the court and therefore backed by the court order. It's analogous, I suppose, to the extent you consider the commission as a party in interest in the FERC proceeding, although, as you point out, you're as a matter of right. And so, is it necessary to have it then adopted and approved by order? I don't know. Yes, we would think that the commitments and statements we make are binding on us. But if it gives this commission some additional comfort, we'd be pleased to talk about that.
Well, and I think one of the reasons for that is, I agree with the probably that these are probably binding. I mean, what I think Chairman Saar raised the issue of the not only the expense but the difficulty that it presents sometimes for this commission to have to deal with the enforcement of commitments, if you will, before a federal agency. I mean, that just can be an awkward situation for us to deal with. And also, there are a few concerns the commissioners have raised that at least didn't appear to me or in my hearing of them to be too burdensome, but that they have concerns that go a little bit beyond what may or may not be raisable, really, as issues in a FERC proceeding. You know, I mean, things like a distribution reliability study. I mean, that's not within FERC's jurisdiction. It is within our jurisdiction, albeit perhaps not within the proceeding we have pending now. But it most assuredly is within the authority of this commission, I think, as you pointed out, Mike, to request such a thing, just under our ordinary regulatory powers here. And so I'm just throwing that out. Again, I'm not presuming an outcome. I'm just saying that it just strikes me as a situation where there doesn't appear to me to be a huge divergence between what I'm hearing the commissioners discuss as concerns and what you're willing to make as commitments. And if there's a way for that to resolve itself, it would seem to make sense to me to see if we couldn't explore a way to go down that path and make it happen.
We agree.
Can I just add one more? And this will be very, very brief. Mike, I believe you're probably okay with this. I just want to make sure, and maybe legally it's not even an issue, but if we have any sort of pending issues or things that were, you know, ongoing or, you know, that would predate the official approval of the actual transaction, I mean, is the new Northwestern, however you want to look at it, are you willing to continue to work on any sort of, I guess I would just say, pending matters?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, certainly.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Smith, I would – go ahead. No, I'm changing topics, so go ahead.
Okay, yeah, and on that issue, I think I was a corporate attorney before coming here. I think I can assure the commissioners that whether they want to be liable for them or not, except to the extent they're discharged in bankruptcy, they're not. They don't have any choice in the matter. That's the form of this
But we're still willing.
Yeah, is a merger transaction, and both parties to a merger are bound by the obligations of the constituent entities.
I just wanted to comment on your suggestion, Mr. Smith. I mean, I'm kind of 50-50 on it. I mean, I see real benefits either way. I mean, I think it sounds, what I'm hearing from the commissioners, there are still some concerns, perhaps a bit milder. Those concerns are a bit more mild now than they were before we began this conversation. But I see some benefit in making sure that the South Dakota PUC has made note of those concerns in the FERC proceeding through a pleading, although I also see real benefit to getting some sort of a settlement agreement so that we know we have absolute faith that everything that's been committed to by Northwestern is on some level enforceable by this commission. What do we need to, I mean, do we need to direct you or other staff members to begin a dialogue with Northwestern? Obviously, no official action. Nothing could be approved by the commission without a meeting, but
mm-hmm. Well, I think at some point if we want to go down that route, obviously we have to have discussions, and that has to lead to something for you to approve. And again, I'm not presuming that'll happen because maybe it won't. But someone has to actually, and that's where the rubber hits the road always, is somebody has to actually do the work, you know. And I think that ordinarily it's the staff that does that. you know, I guess if you want to direct me to go down that path and become the staff in this case, you can do that. And at that point, I guess if that were to happen, I would have to relinquish my commission counsel role on this to Ms. Wiest.
Well, and I don't know that I care about what particular personnel does it. I mean, I'd probably leave that to, you know, our executive director to make that determination. But I just – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree. I'm sorry.
And I think it also is important. I mean, I think it's very important to note that what we would be talking about is only a resolution of concerns vis-a-vis the federal proceeding, and that isn't determining anything about this, you know, jurisdiction of this commission over a state proceeding, but really rather deals with our pleadings with regard to FERC. Am I right in making that clear, Mr. Smith?
Well, I think that's, you know, it's not that you couldn't settle the state proceeding, but you can't settle it in the current procedural status because you've got a bunch of interveners that have interest in the proceeding, and unless they bought into anything that was done, that you can't resolve the state proceeding without resolving the concerns of without having the interveners join in the stipulation. And I don't know, maybe that's possible. I mean, one of the issues that's very challenging here is, I mean, it really is the issue of timing at the FERC level. That's really what gets us in this bizarre quandary here. And initially, we didn't know what the timing would be, and we did know. I mean, we've known from the outset that there was a jurisdictional issue presented because we know what our own statutes say. And I guess it wasn't clear originally whether or not, and ideally what would have been nice is for us to have been able to resolve that early on before we had to become very actively involved at the FERC level by default, but we were unable to make that happen. And so now we're just trying to juggle this in a way that gets a satisfactory resolution for everybody, hopefully.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, John, if I could, I know you have there's a short time frame, and having given one extension, FERC may desire to get the documents in. I do think, though, it's fairly common practice at FERC if they receive notice from both sides, they're in discussions for potential resolution of the issues, that they would defer a filing date. And you could ask for that here. I wouldn't rule out the possibility that with a concentrated effort that we could work through this between now and the 14th as well.
Okay. I mean that, and it might be almost logistically necessary, Mike, if we were going to go down that road to get some kind of an and again, I know I've been through enough acquisitions myself to know how time critical they are. But on the other hand, this is an important thing, and I think we're talking in the weeks, not months here, to pound something out, maybe even less than that, but at least in that kind of time frame, not a long time.
And I know we need to get to some point of resolution and you know, the answer the question, how shall the commission proceed? But I guess before, you know, we were to direct staff to, you know, enter into discussions with Northwestern, I want to get a feel from the other commissioners, not to put anybody on the spot, but if they have some comment as to whether or not they think this is the right approach. I'd be interested in hearing other opinions, I guess.
Well, if we give staff an assignment, we need to be specific as to what the assignment is so that they don't just get together and chat. We need to, are there specific areas that we want to have some conclusions? And I find, you know, through the discussion here, I think we've expressed some concerns, but I don't know what, and I had expressed this to John earlier, I get into a bit of a challenge here if at what point do we decide that we do or we do not have jurisdiction? If we don't have jurisdiction, then I get in a little bit of a, I'm wondering if we go through this process and then we decide later on we don't have jurisdiction, does that come into play here? Or do we get the opportunity to just go ahead and sit down and reach some agreements with them regardless of that?
Well, I think FERC clearly does have jurisdiction.
Exactly.
So
and I recognize we're talking about that at this time, but we're also talking about
some other things. And I agree. And The jurisdictional, the oral argument, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, is scheduled for October 19th, is my recollection. Is that it, or is it? Okay, maybe.
I don't have a chance here.
Oh, the decision's on the 19th. We scheduled the decision for the 19th. So the problem is, and we've got a filing that's got to be made at FERC on the 14th. And so I think what we're talking about is, do we want to pursue going down the path of some positive outcome for both the commission and Northwestern and everybody here in the room, including the interveners, we might be able to effectuate in the FERC proceeding. We can't stipulate to a resolution of the state proceeding until the issues in that case have been resolved, unless all the interveners decide to go down that path too.
All right. To answer the question, as I was saying it, I don't have a problem with our staff meeting with the Northwestern folks and attempting in some way to flesh out and memorialize some of the concerns that we've expressed here today. Mm-hmm. But I don't know to what degree we need to specify these are our specific concerns, or do we just let them go ahead and sit down with the report that's being typed out now and work through that process.
I don't know. I thought the recitations made by the various commissioners were fairly easy to understand and gave a pretty good framework. If you feel you want to do it via a more explicit direction, I think we can do that. I don't know if we can get that accomplished here this morning because we got a whole lot of other people in the crowd.
If you interpret our positions thusly, then I don't have a problem with that. No.
Here's what I see Mr. Gertis wants to make a comment. Here's what I might suggest is, the question today is whether or not to file a protest. I believe that we could file the protest, Mike, you're an attorney, and Davey are too, a lot of attorneys in the room, but, I mean, protest doesn't necessarily mean that we're, it's a legal term more than lay term, set forth some of these issues at the federal level, not try to get something done in less than a week, and, lay out some of those concerns, then I do believe there is some merit to the staff and Northwestern based on the general proposition set out today by the commissioners. Plus, I would give them a fair amount of leeway to also look into what else reasonably may come up, start to talk about this, and I don't know if we get to a situation where ultimately we say to the feds, everything's taken care of, or it may be a situation where we've gotten these assurances, and, if it's, again, this becomes a little bit of a negotiation. But certainly, whether we can get everything resolved or if we get things partially resolved and so to speak, some of the issues taken off the table, if after staff and Northwestern meets and they can come forward to the commission with either kind of a full resolution or a partial resolution that both Northwestern and the commissioners are comfortable standing on, signing on to, I think that has significant value and would be progress, but we all also have to know going into that it may not be a full resolution, it may be partial issues, partial resolutions, and some of these issues being resolved and not all of them, and there may be still a level of inquiry that the commission feels it's going to go forward on, because I mean, this morning you said a lot of the right things. At the same time, the ability to look into the transaction, understand the finances and so on and so forth, I mean, you can say it's a great deal, but without a little more due diligence, obviously, on behalf of the commission or consultants on our part or staff, it's pretty hard, at this point in time for us to say that it is or it isn't. So I do think, though, that there's merit to that, but I also think due to the, what do we have, an August 14th deadline?
We do, but if I heard you right, Mike, you might be amenable to at least some level of a stipulation with us to some deferral of that date if we're genuinely engaging in discussion.
And we just also need to check, and we'd have to make sure with FERC that that's acceptable.
That's right, as well, Mr. Yeah. We certainly are, John. Mm-hmm. It may come after checking with FERC. You may decide that the most reasonable course of action is to go ahead and make a filing for no other reason, a placeholder on your issues and go forward.
Okay.
I would I mean, if it's appropriate at this time, I mean, Mr. Chair, I echo your comments. I wonder if a sort of a three-prong motion isn't in order, and I'll offer it just for discussion purposes. But first, that we do file additional comments in the FERC proceeding. Secondly, that we do authorize staff to enter into discussions with Northwestern. And three, that we do allow our FERC counsel to retain the services of a financial consultant so we can get a better idea of exactly what does this mean for the customers of Northwestern and maybe answer some of these questions that Chairman Saar had about, you know, transparency and filing requirements in Australia.
Before there's a second, can we incorporate the possibility that we might get a deferral of the 14th date into your motion? And I'm assuming it's maybe implied, but that if we were to obtain a deferral of that date that do you want us to attempt to obtain a deferral of that date or not, do you think?
Well, I am more than happy to allow staff the discretion.
Okay.
To work on that, and I'll add that to my motion.
I think that's
certainly
sufficient. Thank you.
I'll second the motion.
Go ahead and vote.
I'm going to concur, and we've forgotten poor Mr. Curtis, so he's been at that mic for about 10 minutes.
I just wanted to answer Mr. Smith's question. I've got the scheduling order here. It took me a little rummaging to find it, but the October 19th is the date that's set for oral argument on the jurisdiction motion. And there's the scheduling order does not say when the decision will be made, but
okay,
that's the
you.
Last entry.
Thank you.
Just so you know.
I think that concludes item number one this morning, and I do want to thank you, gentlemen, for coming to town and being very forthcoming and answering the questions. We appreciate
our
it.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, staff.
I concur. Should we take just a 10-minute break? Or do people want to go for another 50 minutes, or how do we want to do this?
I certainly.
And I think we can be off the record right before that 10-minute break comment.
I certainly would like to have a break, not because I'm a smoker either.
We have a ton of work to do. So if we do need to take a break, I would just ask that it be as expeditious as possible.
10 minutes meaning 10 minutes.
Yeah, we'll say 5 minutes. We'll start in 10.
We are back in session here, and we're waiting for our general counsel, but we've decided to make the executive decision to go ahead anyway. So, Orlane, prepare to be backup. The great thing John always knows, though, is which order to go in. John, should we go back to the regular agenda and start through it, or what's the battle plan on picking up the items?
We can go either way you want. Orlane, did you want to deal with in our earlier meeting? You wanted to go with your issues first, but does it matter?
It didn't matter, but we certainly can just do the rest of the addendum.
Well, I don't. Should we just finish up the addendum?
Sure.
Then? Okay, great. On the addendum under telecommunications, the next items are number one in the matter of the petition for arbitration of interconnection agreements in dockets TC 06036, 06037, 06038, 06039. 06040, 06041, and 06042. And the question in these dockets is, shall the commission grant the motion to suspend the procedural schedule? And Ms. Wiest, I think we'll just jump to you on this.
Right. I believe Golden West filed that motion, so I think we would go to Mr. Schudel.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wiest. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, this is Paul Schudel. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss this motion with you. The motion seeks the approval of the commission to suspend the procedural order which you entered on June 9th and have that suspension effective August 1 while the pendency of the motion for reconsideration of your order to transfer these dockets to the OHE.
Is joining the meeting.
The rule time for Western the motion for reconsideration is 20 days. Yesterday, I had occasion to dialogue with one of Western Wireless's counsel, and I believe Mr. Wazarek is on the line. My understanding is that perhaps Western Wireless is not objecting to this motion, so perhaps I should pause and let him state his position.
And thank you. Mr. Wazarek, are you on the line?
It's WWC's position that we won't object to the suspension, but we want to make it clear that in agreeing to any suspension, we're not agreeing to continuing the deadline for decision-making in these proceedings.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, that was my understanding based upon my dialogue, and my comment would be that looking at the Commission's agenda and its scheduling of future meetings, I noted that your next meeting was scheduled for the 23rd of this month, and I believe that the rule time for the response to the motion for reconsideration would run on August 17th. We would certainly be prepared to request a setting, if mutually convenient to the Commission and Council, on the 23rd, and then to proceed with our argument at that time and obviously your decision, and that depending on the outcome of that, we would understand that there would be a probable further conference between all concerned parties with regard to the procedural schedule, at which time we could address Mr. Wazarek's comment and any other concerns about the schedule, if that would be acceptable.
Would staff have a position?
Staff has no position on these issues.
I guess I have a problem with it. My question is, given that Western Wireless is not does not want to extend the final deadline for the Commission decision, which I believe is December 31st, I'm just trying to figure out if we start postponing the filing of testimony and those kind of things, how are we supposed to fit all of this in prior to December 31st?
I assume that was Ms. Weeks speaking.
Yes, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I think your point is well taken, and I would submit that whether or not this motion is granted, that there is a genuine issue posed as to whether the 1231-06 currently scheduled terminus of this series of cases can be met given the prospect of the Office of Hearing Examiners conducting the hearing, having to produce their proposed findings of fact and law, and having the Commission thereafter review and take action to issue its final decision. And I simply don't have a pat answer for your question other than to say that I believe that the first step is to dispose of the motion for reconsideration. There are other pending motions that directly impact the scope of testimony that any of the parties may be filing, and I would respectfully submit that the proper administration of this case would at least support a short suspension until such time that the reconsideration can be dealt with.
But see, my problem is that I understand when you're saying that we possibly can't get this done by December 31st, 2006. But this is, you know, these are federal statutory deadlines. The parties have agreed to waive that statutory deadline, which I think was August 25th. But barring the parties agreeing to a further waiver, I think I'm kind of bound by the December 31st. And so if I start, the Commission starts, you know, giving parties more time to file testimony and all those kind of things, I just don't see how we're supposed to get this done by December 31st. And I believe, as Mr. Wazarek has stated, he is not agreeing to continue that December 31st deadline.
Well, certainly he can speak for himself, but that is clearly what he said as of today. Whether or not that is subject to any future modification will remain to be seen, I trust. So, at this time, I don't want to repeat my comments, but I would just say that it is simply a fact right now that we do not have a final order as to whether the OAG or whether the commission will ultimately conduct the hearing. We have significant motions that are pending that again, need to be addressed as early as possible, and those have a direct impact on the scope of our testimony. And I can only say again that the parties are requesting that at least we complete that phase of the case, that is to dispose of the reconsideration, and then address comprehensively the scheduling after we have that decision in hand.
But given whatever way the commission decides on the motion for reconsideration, how would that even affect the testimony? I mean, you're saying your testimony is affected by your other pending motions. How would it be affected by whether the commission grants or denies the motion for reconsideration? You're still filing testimony, whether it's before OHE or whether it's before us.
Well, there would be, I guess, at least 3 points I would offer in that regard. Number one, we have a motion to dismiss a number of the pending issues. That motion speaks for itself. Mr. Wieczorek has not yet had the opportunity to file his response thereto, but it addresses, I think, at least 5 or 6 of the pending issues. If that were granted, there would be no need to file testimony on those. Secondly, there is a motion to admit the record in the CT05-001 case. The last day of the hearing on that was yesterday. There would be considerable elimination of duplication, I would submit, if that motion is granted, duplication of testimony. And finally, as a pragmatic matter, I would simply observe, and others I'm sure will have a comment on this, that the tenor and the scope of testimony, I believe, will need to be significantly different if these cases are presented to an expert agency and its staff or are presented to a Office of Hearing Examiners that are hearing these on a first impression basis. I just think each one of those considerations weighs heavily into, as I've described before, the proper administration of this case weighs in favor of suspending the schedule at least until we know who is going to hear the case.
Do you have anything to add, Mr. Wieczorek, about how we're supposed to get this case done by December 31st if we start suspending this procedural schedule today?
I understand the concern that it's going to be a tight time frame, but we're not in a position that we're going to waive that deadline. I think we will be stuck on very short time frames for briefing. I don't agree with all the comments Mr. Schutel made, but I believe they go mostly to his other motions. This procedurally has kind of forced us into a position that there are issues that need to be resolved before the probably before the testimony gets filed. It's my understanding they'd like the resolution of the reconsideration because they might provide more background in their testimony. While I'm not sure that's necessary, going to the hearing officer to provide significant more background, or actually any additional, since the witnesses are going to be present at the hearing, we're deferring to their concerns in granting the extension, but just wanted to make clear, or the suspension, but wanted to make clear that we're not agreeing to an extension of the deadline. I think what it results is we're going to have to run fairly hard once everything's finalized.
Well, what I guess I would say to everyone is if the commission were to grant this motion to suspend the procedural schedule, all I would do is I would be warning the parties that time frames between the time that you're filing your initial testimony, when you're filing your rebuttal testimony, time frames for briefing, all of that is going to be compressed in order that the OHE, if it continues to be with OHE, has sufficient time to make its proposed findings and in order that the commission has sufficient time to actually make a final decision on this. And like I said, if the parties are willing to live with those compressed time limits, that's up to them.
Well, I think the only final comment I could offer is simply that if one reviews the commission's order of June 9th, that order and the procedural schedule established therein did not contemplate and has no mention made of a referral of this matter to the OHE. So it seems to me that the procedural procedural schedule is going to have to be readdressed. And indeed, as I think you're aware, there have been multiple letters issued preliminarily by the OAG indicating the need for a procedural conference. So it doesn't seem like the need to readdress the procedural schedule is a particularly new matter that is only raised by the presentation of the motion that's under consideration.
I guess given the this is just with my caution that that all these time frames will be compressed, whether it stays with OHG or whether it stays with us, then I believe the commission could grant the motion to suspend the procedural schedule.
If I could just, this is Richard Coit with SDTA. I would just like to express our support for the comments of Mr. Schuttle. No question, some of the motions that are pending affect the scope of the testimony. The tenor of the testimony definitely may be different depending on ultimately where this case ends up. And I think it would be incredibly difficult and maybe to a large degree kind of a waste for the preparation of initial testimony without having an answer to some of those questions. So we would appreciate the commission's careful consideration. Thank you.
Questions or comments from commissioners or advisors?
Ms. Weiss, I was trying to get somewhat of an idea of your comfort level with this after your very last comment.
I guess my point is that I'm just warning the parties that to the extent that time limits are going to be compressed in this, it's going to be compressed on their end. It's not going to be compressed on our end. And if everybody was willing to live with that, then fine. I would recommend that you can grant their motion to suspend this procedural schedule.
So we would just repeat that once more for good measure, and that the timeline would be compressed on their end and not on our end.
That's correct.
And that the commission doesn't have any interest in running afoul of federal statutory deadlines.
That's correct.
So we see the accident coming, but we're
exactly.
Going to hope to remain innocent bystanders.
Yeah. And in fairness to the parties, it is possible that OHG will set a different procedural schedule. I don't know. I would assume that they would have kept the schedule at least with respect to the testimony and those deals.
Well, I would make a motion to the effect of staff's recommendation.
Second.
And I will concur with the motion to suspend the procedural schedule.
Next item, number 2 under telecommunications, TC06053, in the matter of the filing by Comtel Telecom Assets LP, doing business as Vartech Telecom and doing business as Excel Telecommunications, for approval of its intrastate switched access tariff and for an exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates. The question today is, shall the Commission approve the intrastate switched access tariff, and shall the Commission approve the exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates? Staff?
Thank you, Chairman Saar. On May 30th, 2006, Comtel filed a petition in accordance with ARSC 2010-2711, asking they be exempt from developing company-specific cost-based intrastate switched access rates. Comtel is further asking for waivers of ARSC 2010-2707 and that they not be required to come back before the Commission every 3 years. 2010-2712, so they can mirror the Quest rate instead of the LECA Plus rate, and 2010-2713 for billing and collection rates. Staff supports this position and is recommending the Commission approve Comtel Telecom Assets petition and grant the waiver of ARSD 2010-2712-13 and allow Comtel Telecom Assets to adopt the Quest intrastate switched access rate with no time restrictions. We are also recommending that the Commission allow Comtel Telecom Assets to file adjustments to its intrastate switched access rate so long as those adjustments either mirror Quest rate or are lower.
Thank you. Is anyone appearing on behalf of Comtel, Vartech, Excel? Seeing no one. Just a quick question. Has Vartech been having financial trouble, or Or did I read that in the trade publications, or maybe I'm wrong about that?
This is Harlan Best of staff. I don't know if it was, I think a number of the companies declared bankruptcy and were acquired by Comtel, Telecom Assets LP, and then what they've done is they've continued to use the DBA of the respective companies that they acquired.
Okay. Thank you. That makes sense. Any other commissioner questions?
Yeah. I mean, we do these kinds of dockets from time to time, and after reviewing the filing, I didn't notice anything particularly different from this as compared to others we've done recently. Is my read on that correct, Mr. Best, Ms. Kraft?
Yes, it is the same. You have approved the same type of access requirement in five other dockets.
Any other questions? Seeing none, then I would move that the Commission approve the intrastate switched access tariff and that the Commission approve the exemption from developing company-specific cost-based switched access rates in accordance with staff's recommendations.
Second.
Next item on the addenda under telecom is TC06116, and the matter of the filing, matter of the application of Mid-Continent Communications for an extension to file its certification regarding its use of federal universal service support. And the question today is, shall the Commission grant the extension to file the certification? Mr. Gerdes, good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, I'm Dave Gerdes. I'm a lawyer from Peer, and I represent Mid-Continent Communications. We had a problem with key people being out of the office when the deadline approached in an unanticipated way, and therefore Mid-Continent has asked to extend the deadline to today. I will tell you that the material, except for something that was supposed to be coming by FedEx, is on my desk. I left before the FedEx got there, but I'm expecting it's there, and so we should be able to make the filing today, if I ever get out of here.
You're not the only one keeping it.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Mr. Best?
Staff would have no objection to the granting of that.
And are you still able to make your deadlines or whatever you need to do to make sure you get the support?
Yes, I'm quite sure.
Okay, good. Excellent. Any commissioner questions or comments?
Second.
And I concur. All right, we have finished the addendum to the agenda. Should we go back to the obviously we should go back to the agenda. What order do we want to take these in, Mr. Smith?
I think we'll take item one first.
Under consumer complaints?
Items one and two, and then we'll move CT05-007 to at or near the back of the agenda because that will be a more lengthy oral argument. And I know Bill squared, they've agreed to that. I just talked to him.
Anyway, great. So let's take up consumer complaints. Number one is CE05001 in the matter of the complaint filed by Larry L. Fliss, Hendricks, Minnesota, against Ottertail Power Company regarding voltage fluctuation. And the question today is, shall the Commission dismiss the complaint and close the docket? Ms. Gregg, Ms. Graff?
I'll take that. This is Deb Gregg from staff. I've spoke with Mr. Fliss on several occasions during the summer, and according to Mr. Fliss, the installation of the soft starts on the irrigation motors at the Hendricks Golf Course by Ottertail Power have eliminated the voltage fluctuations that they were experiencing. The actions taken by Ottertail Power appear to have corrected the problems, and at this time, staff would recommend to close the docket.
Thank you. I know the parties had been working on this on an ongoing basis, so... Great. Any questions from the commissioners? If not, I will move that we dismiss the complaint and close the docket.
I will second the motion.
Concur.
Next item under consumer complaints is CE06003 in the matter of the complaint filed by Global Polymer Industries, Inc., Arlington, South Dakota, against the City of Arlington regarding electrical service. And the question today is, shall the Commission grant intervention to SDMEA? And, great. Mr. Nelson, are you in the line?
Yes, sir.
Oh, great. Thank you. And Larry, we do have a court reporter here in Pier. So if you'll go ahead, identify yourself, who you're representing, and just as much as you possibly can, speak loudly so we can hear you in Pier.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear
Yes, you're still a little faint, but we can't hear you well enough to take a look. That's better. Thank you.
My name is Larry Nelson. I'm from here in South Dakota. I represent the South Dakota Municipal Electric Association, which is an organization of member municipalities. There are 34 of them that provide electricity to approximately 100,000 customers in South Dakota. It is also an affiliate of the South Dakota Municipal League. We have filed a petition.
Larry, if you could please, I think you're going to have to back up about three sentences. We lost you there, and you're sort of, I don't know how to describe it, fading in and out. We can hear you for a couple words, then you sort of disappear. So as much as possible, if you're on a speakerphone, take it off and get the receiver up.
Direct phone. Can I continue, Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely, although if you want what the last three sentences kept in the record or put into the record, I think you're going to need to go back and say them again because the court reporter is having trouble.
South Dakota Municipal Electric Association is an organization comprised of member municipalities that provide electricity to approximately 100,000 customers in South Dakota and is an affiliate of the South Dakota Municipal League. There are 34 members of that organization that own and operate municipal
Gary Schumacher
is joining the meeting.
Could you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
We heard Gary Schumacher.
No, but could you hear me?
No, during those drops, we actually lose audio. So if you could, I hate to make you, you don't have to back up to what SDMEA is again, but.
But Mr. Chairman, could you hear me when I was talking about SDMEA?
Absolutely. So
right.
If you go up to the Gary Schumacher break.
All right.
Thank you.
My question to you is, what would you like to hear from us as far as in this record and how do we proceed? Do you want argument or do we answer questions?
Well, you've alleged standing. You can, I guess you can, at this point in time, if you want to, just kind of rest on your pleading. That's great. We'll go to staff, see if they have a position, and then go to commissioner questions, and then we'll take your matter up for official consideration. So,
Mr. Chairman, Rich Elsper is still on the line, too. I represent Global Polymer.
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry, Rich. I skipped you in the process, not strictly by omission. My fault there. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rich.
And we did file a objections to the intervention.
Thank you. So why don't we do this, Larry? You'll end up getting the last word because you're in the moving party. So if you're comfortable at this point in time, letting Rich go, then we'll do staff, see what commissioner questions we have, and then come back around to you. We do have your pleading, so we can go forward with that.
Okay, fine, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Larry. Rich, if you'd like to go ahead, please. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, sir. Just very briefly, we filed objections to the intervention of the South Dakota Municipal Electric Association simply for the reason this is a very fact-driven matter, and it's of interest mainly to the parties involved, which is the customer, Global Polymer Industries, which is in Arlington, and a very small municipal electric, namely the city of Arlington. There's no novel issues of fact. There's no novel issues of law that needs someone to intervene on behalf of them. Of course, they're coming in on behalf of the city of Arlington. And so we would just ask that the intervention be denied. You do have an expert report that the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission actually commissioned. And we think it's an excellent report, factually, and provides the commission with all of the information that it needs to probably decide the case with. And so we just see no reason for South Dakota MEA to be involved. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, staff.
Thank you, Chairman Saar. Staff has no objection for SDMEA to be allowed intervention in this docket. Staff would just note that we have allowed, I guess, statewide organizations such as SDREA and SDATC to intervene on factual complaint dockets before, and that's why staff would not have any objection to SDMEA being allowed in this docket as well.
Thank you. And Mr. Coit is not in the room to give his standard disclosure. So just reduce it to writing. Let's see. Then back around to commissioners and advisors' questions or comments.
This is Commissioner Johnson. I do have a question for Mr. Nelson. Mr. Nelson, it was noted by a Global Polymer that there weren't any novel issues of fact or law, and that there wasn't any clear indication in your filing of how your members would be how the members of SDMEA would be affected by this docket. Did you have a response to that?
Yes, Commissioner Johnson. Municipal electrics are obviously in the electric business. In this particular case, we have allegations from Global Polymer that talk about demand charges, voltage fluctuation, bad voltage regulators, undersized substations, complaint about shutting off voltage during a fire, concerns about the development of contingency plans. Our position is that the manner in which you address these issues in this particular case are probably going to be the manner that you are going to address these issues if they arise with other members. So we're watching the case. We think that what you do will affect how our members do business and the business model that they're going to employ, because we're well aware that the ultimate penalty, so to speak, is that if we don't do that, what you tell us to do, we pull that territory or that customer from us. So we would like to. What is fair and what is not fair, and come to a resolution that ultimately, I think, serves everybody well. Not have us at the table, I think, would be a disservice.
And just for the court, I think the last item that I think I heard correctly, to not have us at the table would be a disservice to all, is that what you said?
Yes.
Thank you, Larry.
Mr. Nelson, Commissioner Johnson again, just a follow up to that. I mean, the concerns raised about adequacy of service and the statutes that deal with that issue. I mean, let me back up and just ask. So, do you view the concerns of your member companies as being distinct and unique when compared to concerns that other utilities are affected by those adequacy of service statutes? Would have?
I think they would be the same as other customers that provide, or any of the other companies that provide service. We have an interest in being here and to be part of the process and provide input. Again, whatever you decide in this case, I think is going to have a direct impact on how we do business.
Mr. Nelson, I mean, is that your opinion, even given that, I mean, at least from a legal standpoint, a commission order wouldn't have any precedential value? I'm not saying that from a de facto perspective it wouldn't, but I mean, from a legal perspective it doesn't. Is that right?
Yes. But again, our concern would be from a de facto perspective.
Yes, Ms. Graff.
Just to kind of follow up on some of the line of questioning Commissioner Johnson has been asking, the adequacy of service statutes are there. We have very limited jurisdiction over municipalities and the rural electrics, and this is one of those areas, if not one of the only areas, that they do fall under. And so I can see why the SDMEA is jumping on board on this one.
Mr. Helsberg, do you care to respond?
Well, I do. First of all, this is strictly a complaint by a customer in the city of Arlington. And whether or not a transformer was working or a transformer wasn't working, whether or not the city of Arlington responded appropriately, whether or not their lines are big enough or not big enough, has nothing to do from a statewide basis. And I mean, we're not going to create any novel ruling out of this particular case. This is just a complaint by a customer against its electrical supplier, which happens to be the City of Arlington. And now to have the South Dakota Municipal Electric Association want to intervene in this matter, I'm still not sure after listening to all that what it is they want to prove or how they will be affected. They just simply have no interest in the matter that's going to be affected. This is just a matter with the city, and it makes it much more difficult. When you have a customer, and that's all I represent is one customer, if we now have to start submitting responses not only to the City of Arlington but to the South Dakota Municipal Electric Association, when it's very fact-driven and you have a report from your expert that addresses, to me, virtually 99 or 100% of the case. And so the adequacy of service, this isn't going to result in termination of service or anything of that nature, and we all know that. So I think it's a fairness issue as well. I mean, a customer should be able to file a complaint and not have the REAs, the MEAs, the Rural Water, all these associations jump on board, obviously, against that particular customer. I mean, that's what's going to happen here. Let the case rise or fall on its merits, especially when we're not asking for some novel ruling by the commission that's going to set precedence in the state of South Dakota.
And now here in Pierre, the SDTA, SDREA, the investor-owned companies, they're all moving forward to jump in the docket as well.
Must be a slow month in Pierre.
Well, it's not been the fastest morning, but... In any event, I'm curious, Mr. Smith, you've got the rules in front of you, and certainly we don't need to make this out to be a bigger issue than it is, but of course we all are always concerned about, standing is a big issue and the ability to get in these cases, and although we may not follow the regular rules of precedence, we do want to be mindful that we're showing some level of consistency. I'm just curious to see your thoughts on the issue.
Well, maybe I'll just, I'm going to read the relevant part of the rule, and then maybe Mr. Nelson, you can address that. It says a petition shall be granted by the commission if petitioner shows that petitioner will be bound and affected either favorably or adversely with respect to an interest peculiar to the petitioner as distinguished from an interest common to the public or to the taxpayers in general. Could you explain what interest the SDMEA has that is peculiar to it as opposed to the public at large and in particular maybe the entire universe of utilities out there?
Mr. Smith, I would suggest that three questions that the commission has put on its docket of what's going to be answered. And the first one is whether Respondent is rendering or supposing to render adequate service. The answer to that is something that's going to affect how all municipal electric companies do business. I realize it's not res judicata on another issue, but it informs the base. The second part of that question is if that service is...
Larry, I'm sorry, but we lost you at the tail end of that. Carla, do you want to... No, maybe we should grab a mic. Our reporter here...
Okay, the answer to that is something that's going to affect how all municipal electric companies do business. I realize...
And Larry, it's not the speed, it's the volume. You're talking just fine speed-wise. The problem is you're going in and out, and I won't ask you who your carrier is.
I realize that this is not res judicata on South Coast Municipal Electric Association, but that it does... Second, the thing that the commission has indicated it's going to look at is what corrective action shall be ordered under these particular facts. Order corrective action. What you ordered is something that we have to think about as an association as it relates to something you may require us to do or to say, well, we did it in this other particular case under these facts. Finally, if you were to order corrective action, time action, Mr. Smith, I think that we're affected by
Mr. Nelson, one of the issues that Mr. Helsper raised was the question of additional burden, and I know that when we have associations that intervene, they normally make a real effort to not duplicate requests and so on and so forth. Do you want to just address, I mean, is this going to be something where there is going to be substantial burden, or are you mostly going to be watching the pleadings and maybe asking some additional questions at the table, or, what do you see as your client's role going forward, and will it create an undue burden for Mr. Helsper's client?
Commissioner Schatzar, I would suggest that it would not, and I would see our role as the latter part of your question.
Thank you. And I do appreciate Mr. Helsper's perspective. I mean, it's, when we have, I won't say huge telecommunications companies, but when we have fairly large players coming in and having lengthy proceedings, that's far different than some local customer who may have limited resources dealing with it in terms of costs and the ability to bear those costs. Any other commissioner questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman, this is Rich Elster. Just finally, I would think that anything that Larry has commented on, the SDMEA can review any decision of this commission and decide if it wants to make any changes. I have yet to hear how there's any type of compelling interest for them to be involved.
Thank you. Yeah, motion, comments, questions, whatever the commission's pleasure is.
I will move, Commissioner Hansen moves that the commission does not grant the intervention to SDMEA.
I will second.
I do not concur. Johnson.
Next item under, we're going to skip the CT05007. Next item we'll go to is electricity, EL04037, in the matter of the filing by Black Hills Power, Inc. for approval of a contract with deviation with Black Hills Chairlift Company doing business as Terry Peak Ski Area. Today, shall the commission grant the request to withdraw the filing? And who's taking this, Black Hills Power?
Mr. Chairman, this is Brian Iverson, in-house counsel for Black Hills Corporation. Back in November of 2004, we entered into a contract with deviations with Terry Peak to address some specific issues they had related to making snow at the facilities. Over the application kind of sat there as we were Terry Peak was implementing equipment and making other arrangements to obtain the water supply and whatnot that they needed to for the snowmaking facilities. There are other issues that have arisen related to those capabilities, and so we're just withdrawing this contract for deviations, and they're going to continue to be served on our current tariff rates.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson?
Yeah, I think he summarized it well, and we would support the dismissal.
Okay, I would move the commission grant the request to withdraw the filing.
Second.
Concur.
Okay. Next item under the electricity dockets, number 2, EL04041, in the matter of the application of Basin Electric Power Cooperative, Inc. for an energy conversion facility permit for the construction of a combustion turbine generator near Groton, South Dakota. And the question today is how shall the commission proceed? And Ms. Cray? Russ, if you'd like to proceed.
This is a submission that was made pursuant to a stipulation that supports the issuance of the permit to construct with respect to our Groton substation, generation station, I'm sorry. And pursuant to the stipulation, just submitting noise and other testing and study protocols for approval by commission. And our primary goal here is, besides approval of the submission, is just to be available with ourselves and our consultants to ask any questions, technical or otherwise, that the commissioners or anybody else might have.
Thank you. Staff?
In the stipulation that Russ mentioned, there is a statement that a post-construction operational noise assessment will be completed by an independent third-party noise consultant approved by the commission to show compliance. They have submitted a testing protocol that I believe all of you have. Martin has reviewed it. They did make some change, a few changes to that testing protocol. I believe they also have Burns and Mack on the phone with them should you have any questions about the protocol. Basically, what staff is asking, and I believe what is required under the stipulation is that you approve the consultant or the protocol and that and the consultant for them to go out and test the noise level.
Thank you. Any questions from commissioners?
I would just reviewing the document, and there is some discussion in 3.3 about atmospheric conditions, and I just didn't know to what extent humidity, which is not addressed. I mean, does humidity affect how well sound travels?
It's not necessarily the humidity, but you can have an inversion effect in terms of cloud cover sometimes. We don't expect that to be an issue, but we do always record the humidity. So if we do get some levels that we think are out of the ordinary, we can go back and look at all of our atmospheric data to determine if there was anything else going on at that time.
So in general, and I'm not talking obviously about when it's raining, but atmospheric humidity in general does not affect sound measurements in this kind of a study?
Not generally, unless there is a low cloud cover and we're having some sort of inversion effect, which sometimes does mean that the humidity and dew point are higher.
Okay, great, thanks.
Any other questions or comments? So staff's recommendation on how to proceed, Ms. Kramer?
Would be to approve the independent third party here to go out and test the noise level using the protocol that they have submitted.
I would make that motion.
Second.
All right, next we're going to drop down to item number 4 under electricity, EL 06017, in the matter of the filing by Montana Dakota Utilities Company for approval of tariff revisions. Today, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions? Mr. Gertis, we are at good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I'm Dave Gertis, a multitasking lawyer from Pierre who represents Montana Dakota Utilities in this docket. I have to confess, I'm going to rely on Mr. Jacobson mostly because Tammy Aberly couldn't get a phone line in. My understanding is that this is a revision of the avoided cost rates that would apply to smaller customers. It would not affect, for instance, the Superior wind farm and things such as that. And with that, I'll rely on Mr. Jacobson. I think he's ready to comment.
At what rate is Mr. Jacobson billing your firm for his services? I figured this.
The same rate he always bills our firm.
thank you, Commissioners. this filing is filed in the same format and using the same computation techniques as previously filed with the commission. MDU utilizes their ProSim model to determine the avoided cost rates for customers of 100 kW and less, which obviously are very small customers. The staff did send additional questions to the company, which were answered. regarding their load characteristics and certain aspects of their filing. But in general, the filing was made in the consistent manner with previous filings, and we would recommend approval of the new rates that result from the new calculations.
Thank you. Any questions from commissioners or comments?
Just a quick note to highlight what Mr. Gerdes has said, that this, you know, wouldn't affect any, you know, Superior Renewable Plan wind farms. And, in fact, not only is it, you know, much larger than the 100 kW, but I think it's something like 300 times larger than the largest generator that would apply for this rate. So that's worth noting.
If I may, will this not, in fact, and excuse me if you covered this, I've been reading through a number of materials here, would this not, in fact, make it more desirable for a small generator?
I believe so, yes.
There are a number of, there are, you know, optional rates under these, what's being changed here. Typically, some of the rates go up, some go down under the current filings. In this case, for instance, rate 95, metering charges were reduced. Actual payment for KWH Energy would increase to a new customer. So, you know, if you're interested in individual rate changes for each rate, those are most easily observed in the last part of the filing. But yes, I mean, you can see the effect on each individual rate. For rate 95, you are correct. I mean, the metering charge was reduced, and the energy charge payment to the customer did increase. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions from commissioners, or take the opportunity to ask Mr. Gerdes some in-depth comments and questions about the tariff provisions? I will move that we approve the tariff revisions.
Second.
I concur.
Next, number 5, EL06019, in the matter of the application of Black Hills Power, Inc. for authority to increase rates for electric service. And the question is, shall the commission grant intervention to the Black Hills interveners, and shall the commission approve the proposed consulting contract? And just to note it, petitions for intervention have been filed by Merilot, GCC Dakota, which I think is the cement plant, right, and Pope and Talbot. With that, there's a lot of staff on this one, of course. Ms. Kramer, Mr. Jacobson.
Yes, I can take this. This is Dave Jacobson, commission staff. We don't have any objection to the intervention by the interveners. And you actually, more appropriately, the contract is not ready, but what we are asking for is the approval to contract according to the specifications given in the proposal put forth by our consultant. And we would just request approval to contract with him according to those specifications and parameters.
Okay, thank you. Black Hills, do you have any comments?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Johnson, and Commissioner Hansen, my name is Jackie Sargent. I'm the Director of Rates for Black Hills Corporation, participating on behalf of Black Hills Power. Black Hills has no objection to Black Hills intervener's petition to intervene in notice of appearance.
I'm sorry. Okay, and I'll just check. Is anyone on the line from the law firm that has a consult representing Merilot, Pope and Talbot, and the cement plant? All right, any questions from the commissioners? Seeing none, I would move that we grant intervention to the requested interveners, and that the commission approve staff or give them instructions and approval to contract according to the specification as outlined in the proposal.
Second.
I concur.
Next item, number 6, EL06020, in the matter of the application by Navitas Energy, Inc. for an energy conversion facility for construction of the White Wind Farm. and associated collection substation and electric interconnection system. Today, the question is, shall the commission assess a filing fee for actual expenses not to exceed $350,000 with an initial deposit of $8,000? Mr. Gerdes, how are you keeping all this straight?
It's very, very difficult, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Gerdes. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent Navitas, which has pending before the commission a proposal for a 200-megawatt wind farm near White, South Dakota. And we do not object to the assessment of the filing fee as described in the agenda.
Thank you. Any comments from staff?
Not unless the commission has any additional questions. This is Bob Canale. It's per SDCL 49-41B-12. And then the commission could assess the minimum filing fee of $8,000 and up to a maximum of $350,000 to be requested from the executive director as from time to time.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from commissioners? Do we have a motion?
I would move that the commission assess the filing fee for expenses not to exceed $350,000 and also that the commission receive an initial deposit of $8,000.
I'll second.
Concur.
Next item, under telecommunications, TC-03113, in the matter of the filing by Northern Valley Communications LLC for approval of revisions to its intrastate switched access tariff. And the question today or questions today is, shall the commission reopen docket number TC-03113 and enter an order that the rates approved by the order dated August 29, 2003 are the final rates and are not subject to refund with interest and close the docket? And Mr. Groff, I think you're on the line with James Valley.
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. Would you like to proceed?
Yeah, I guess basically we discussed this matter with staff quite some time ago. View it as a cleanup issue, just formally approving some older rates that are actually no longer in effect, and I would like to proceed as outlined here by staff.
Thank you, staff.
This is Bob Canadel. If the commission has any questions to speed this up, I'll be happy to answer those, but the blurb that's in the agenda pretty well describes what the request is. The staff would recommend, you know, approval.
Thank you. Commissioner, questions or comments? Seeing none, do we have a motion?
Move for approval according to staff's recommendations that the commission reopen docket number TC-03-113 and enter an order that the rates approved by the order dated August 29, 2003 are the final rates and not subject to refund with interest and to close the docket.
I'll second.
I concur.
Number two, under telecommunications, TC-05153, in the matter of the review of the implementation of 811 as a national abbreviated dialing code for the one-call notification. The question today is, how shall the commission proceed? Good morning or good afternoon, Mr. Englert.
Chairman, fellow commissioners, staff, Larry Englert, executive director of the South Dakota One-Call Notification Board. I would just like to give a very brief background on the three-digit dialing and where we would propose that we go forward with that. In 2002, the Pipeline Safety Act established a federal requirement that a three-digit number be established to facilitate public safety, specifically targeting a calling number for farmers, ranchers, homeowners, and small business. The need for the major excavator to remember a number, most have it on speed dial, but it was really targeted at that range. In South Dakota, as background, our primary construction season starts somewhere between March 15th and April 15th, depending on how much snow is on the ground. But generally, it's a very sudden turn of about a tenfold increase in a two-week period. So that's the dilemma we faced with the FCC order having an April 7th or an April 07 date for intervention. We are basically making three types of requests as a part. We'd like to see the commission assign the 811 number to the South Dakota One Call Notification Board. We currently are under contract with our vendor through the end of 2009. But should the time come that we would ever change vendors, it gives us the flexibility to move that number in that direction. Secondly, we'd like to establish a transition date of December 31st, 2006, no later than that date. There have been comments submitted, and in two cases with the South Dakota Telephone Association, we have had dialogue with them, and they're willing, they will accept that date. I have also had dialogue with Sprint Nextel, and if an order is issued, they said they would have no objection to that date. So generally, we have a uniform agreement on the 12/31 date. Last, as a part of that order, I'd like to have numerous comments that came in requested that they be notified of the 1-800 number. And while we have responded to them by email, et cetera, we would like to incorporate our 1-800 number. The FCC order requires a toll-free number, so we would just incorporate it right into the order so that it was sent out. The 800-781-7474 translation number would be included right in the order, and we would have fulfilled all those obligations at that time. So at this time, I would request that the commission issue an order establishing those three things and be here to address any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Graff. Do you have additional comments?
No.
Okay, thank you. Are you comfortable with the recommendations?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. You probably wrote them.
Just one point. Is it my understanding that all the parties, you know, I read through all the comments that came in, have agreed that they would comply with the December 31st? The only one I can mention, I can think that you didn't mention, Verizon, they talked about.
They're already done. Verizon's already done.
And so Sprint Nextel, they'll say they will?
Yeah. Yes, Sprint Nextel.
And Stockholm, Strandberg, and ITC also have agreed?
I visited with South Dakota Telephone Association through Rich Kreit, and he has visited with them accordingly. So to your answer, yes, they were all.
They have all agreed now. Okay.
Great, thank you. Any questions from commissioners or comments?
Yes, the 800 number would still work. It just creates a number for those that don't use it frequently. So whether you dial 811 or the 1-800 number, both numbers will go to the same place.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from commissioners? Seeing none, I would move the commission issue an order in accordance with the recommendations of the One Call Board.
I will second.
Thank you. Next item, number 3 under telecommunications, in the matter of the filing for approval of agreements and dockets, TC 06067081 084 085 and 090. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the agreements in the above reference dockets? And should we go to staff first on this one? Ms. Graff?
We can. I know several of the parties. I know Quest is on the phone. I know Mr. Heason is here for Prairie Wave, but if they don't want to take their turn at the mic, I will just go forward with saying that the agreements have all been properly filed. They contain no discriminatory language, and no comments have been filed within the 20-day time frame. So staff would recommend approval of all the above agreements.
Thank you very much. And if anyone on the line or here in Pierre wants to make additional comments, certainly do so. But we have staff's recommendation on that. Hearing none, I would move that the commission approve the agreements in the above referenced dockets.
Second.
Next item, we're on number 4, right?
Yes.
Number 4 under telecommunications, in the matter of the filing for an extension of deadline for filing a 2006 cost study in dockets TC 06068, 069, 070, 071, 072, 073, 074, and 075. And the question today is, shall the commission approve the waiver of ARSD 2010-2714 to December 31st, 2006? Ms. Rogers.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Saar and commissioners. I didn't file all of these petitions, but I did file some of them, and so I will speak to them, and if anyone wants to add after I'm finished, they certainly can. Under the South Dakota cost study rules, you have a historical test year, and if you want to use that 12-month period, you need to file your cost study within 6 months of the close of that test year. We're in a real state of flux right now, I think it would be fair to say, with regard to the status of our cost studies. And so depending on what happens in this commission's rulemaking docket and also on intercarrier comp at the federal level, some of the companies would like to preserve their option to possibly file an 06 cost study. And if they do that, they would still like to base it on the 2005 historical test year, even though they're not filing within that six-month deadline. That's the reason for our petition. We're just asking to allow them more time to determine whether or not they would like to file a 2006 cost study, and if they do, they would still like to use a 2005 historical test year. Try to answer any questions if I could.
Thank you. Any comments from staff?
This is Harlan Best of staff. These companies are not subject to the three-year requirement that they, the administrative rules say they have to file every, at least every 3 years. These companies have filed within at least 1 or 2 years in the past, so they're not required to file with an 05 test period. Unlike what happened with ITC and West River at Bison, those companies had to get a waiver request so they, because they were required to file with an 05 test period. These companies don't necessarily have to use the 05 test period because they don't have to file an 06, but staff will support the request for the waivers so they can file with an 05 test period.
Mr. Best, I presume that that rule is in place to keep people from, you know, gaming the system and sort of cherry pick a test year. My presumption is that there's nothing special about 2005 and that there wouldn't be any reason for the commission to deny the waiver. Is that right?
No. What these companies have done is they've made additional investments, and they have, a number of them have been filing almost on an annual basis. But it's because of what they've invested in their infrastructure. And this is just allows them to keep that annual filing, if you will, on an ongoing basis.
Sure. Great. Thank you very much.
If I could comment on that, I appreciate that clarification. The rules require a company to file a cost study every 3 years, but they do not prohibit a company from filing more frequently. I think the thought of the companies was that if you follow that six-month time frame, you're going to have all different historical test years, so to speak, and thought it would be a lot more streamlined if they do file to just use a historical 2005 test year.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from staff or commissioners? Do we have a motion?
I'll move that the commission approve the waiver of ARSD 2010-2714 to December 31st, 2006.
Second.
And I concur. Next item under telecommunications is TC-06078, in the matter of the filing by Heartland Telecommunications Company of Iowa, doing business as Hickory Tech Corporation, for a waiver of ARSD sections 2010-3252, 2010-3253, and 2010-3254. And the question today is a popular one. How shall the commission proceed? Staff?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff. I'm not sure if anyone is on from Heartland. I don't recognize a name, but I have no idea who's on.
Anyone on the line or anyone here in person that's representing them? Mr. Gerdes, no? You used to do work for them, but that's another story. All right, please proceed then.
Thank you. Heartland's request, and I'll just make this short, is that they be allowed to file a copy of its Iowa ETC certification with us. As to that, staff has no problem with them doing that portion of it. Then they proceed to ask that the commission accept that filing as sufficient to make the determination to include Heartland on the list of certified carriers it provides to the FCC on or before October 1 of every year. that's where staff will depart on this. Until we see a filing, it's hard for us to say it's sufficient. And while Iowa has proposed amended rules to their ETC, and when I checked this morning, they still do not appear to be final rules. They're very similar to what we have recently enacted, so I'm guessing that when they file, it will look, they will have the information very similar to what we require, but I don't know that for a fact. So bottom line is, staff would agree that they can file it. We will take a look at it and attempt to make it fit ours. If we have any further questions, obviously we will send a data request. And Heartland should understand that it runs a risk that its certification may or may not be approved by us by October 1 if they don't get it filed timely.
So at this point, should we just defer action on this request? Wouldn't that be the best way, and then wait for them to actually file what they're going to file in Iowa? You guys can look it over. And if that's sufficient, then it's possible that the commission could still actually grant the waiver. Is that correct?
I think that would be true, yes.
So at this point, I would just recommend that we defer action on this.
That would work.
I would move that we defer action in this docket.
Second.
I concur.
Next item, number six, in the matter of the filing for approval of agreements to, amendments to agreements in dockets TC 06, 082, 083, and 089. And the question today is, shall the commission approve amendments to the agreements in the above referenced dockets? And they've involved Quest, Comtel, Vartec, Excel, and AT&T staff.
Again, I think Quest is on the line, and I know Bill Van Camp for AT&T is in the audience, but staff will just proceed with their recommendation, and should they have any recommendations or comments, they may make them afterwards. All the agreements have been, or amendments to the agreements have been properly filed. Staff noticed no discriminatory language, and no comments were filed during the 20-day time frame, so we'd recommend approval.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Any questions from commissioners or motions?
Move for approval.
Second.
And I concur. Number seven on telecommunications, TC 06086, in the matter of the filing by XO Communication Services, Inc. for approval of revisions to its access services tariff. The question today is, shall the commission approve the tariff changes? And let's see. Ms. Kramer, Mr. Best.
This is Harlan Best, to staff. This XO Communication Services, Inc. filed three different tariff changes with the commission. They're a competitive LEC. They also provide IXC service, long distance, and they also have switched access. They filed this exact same tariff and rates in each of those, in all three of their tariffs. What this does is this company has a number of copies of invoices available on the web. If a customer does not want to access the web and print the invoices, they can ask the company to mail them a copy of the invoice. And the company will do that for a price. And it's the same in the local tariff, the IXC tariff, and the switched access tariff of an electronic format of $10 per invoice, or they can get it on a CD for $25. And staff would just recommend approval of the other two tariffs aren't subject to commission approval. They're just filed for informational purposes. Since this is a switched access tariff, the commission has to act on it. And staff would recommend approval.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions from commissioners? Hearing none, I would move approval.
Second.
Concur.
All right. That takes us to the end of the agenda. We do have two more items to take up. Unfortunately, we do not